Welcome to the Decentralized Consciousness Podcast. And today I have here Govinda. Govinda is one of the founders of Wake Retreat Center in Costa Rica that recently hosted the Nostrica conference. Welcome, Govinda.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Very, very nice to have you here. And I'm so curious to hear your story and your plans for the future. So let's start with your life story, where you're from and how did you end up where you are now?
Yeah, I was born in Belgium, in Brussels. So French-speaking part of Belgium. And where do I go next? I mean, simple, happy childhood, stable family. I studied business in Brussels. And I had a very profound awakening during my studies, which was at the age of 19 years old, my second year of university. And it happened from first reading Mantak Shia's book about the male sexual energy, cultivating the male sexual energy, and then applying this wisdom on myself. So basically letting go of the urge to release the sexual charge within myself, and instead to use that charge to explore my inner world and open up energy channels in my body and bring up light on all the resistances and tensions that were accumulated in my mind, body, and soul, because the charge wants to move. And if it's not being dissipated through sexuality, sexual release, it has to move, it has to flow in other ways, right? You can't repress such a powerful force. You can only redirect it and transmute it. So that happened when I was 19, and I started to read spiritual books, which created a massive awakening. I read Osho, The Book of Secrets, which described tantric meditations to basically go beyond the mind, bypass the mind, go in the present moment and into the center of consciousness, the source of consciousness, and changing completely all my understanding and perspectives that I had about life and about myself. So it changed my life completely, and everything changed, my relationships to everything, to people, to even my studies. I considered stopping and doing something else. In the end, I continued my studies. I thought, why do I need to change anything? Let's just finish what I started, and we'll see how it serves or not. But I was not interested in human relationships anymore. I was just interested in divine exploration within myself and meditation and just being a student. And yeah, so that was already enough for me. The regular human connections were not bringing me any form of satisfaction. So I realized that the source of feeling seen by others or validated and all this stuff could be found directly from within. The source of it is consciousness, and I can heal all the wounds of unworthiness, non-recognition directly. I don't need to go through the matrix of social interactions to experience fullness. I can just release all the resistances and reconnect within, from the center from which this true satisfaction and fulfillment comes from. So that's really what happened during my studies and after. And since then, so 21 years since this awakening, it's been 21 is actually a fortunate number for this conversation, but it's actually been just 21 years since this reprogramming shift of consciousness started to happen. And it's been happening, keep evolving, keep growing, keep expanding, refining in different ways since then, right? And I was seeing that humanity was on an unsustainable path. Because I studied business and economics and finance, I was seeing that the fiat system was a complete scam, that it was, the government were not trustworthy or sincere, that it was completely distorted for specific interests. I was understanding that already in 2005, I understood that. And I became a gold bug at that time. I started to save in gold, and I was thinking, how can we put together a system for fairness, to build a civilization that's not controlled by psychopaths, basically. So that was one aspect. And then, yeah, I was also interested very much in sustainability in terms of being on the land rather than in cities, more connected to nature. And I was interested in permaculture and communities because I was valuing being in closer connection to the people I live with and really creating a life together and not just these superficial city relationships where we kind of hang out superficially, use each other, but it's not really truly building a life together. So I really felt like the way forward is sustainability and deeper human connections, communities. I thought that there was going to be some kind of collapse. In 2005, after my studies, during my studies at the end, I thought, wow, this humanity is going to crash. There will be a collapse. I was a bit apocalyptic at that time. I had this moment. So I went to New Zealand and I thought, okay, I'm going to maybe find a nice community in New Zealand and do something there. And what I actually found was a spiritual teacher, interestingly, an enlightened teacher, very advanced being and powerful transmissions and meditations with him. And then I realized in this ashram, in this meditation center, that I didn't have to escape from society and Europe. I could just go back, and I had to actually become sustainable myself financially to learn to make a living for myself and to own and be responsible as a human being. Even if it was within a non-sustainable system, I had to build sustainability personally and to learn that and to grow and mature in that. So I went back and I started to work as a consultant in IT for banks, actually. I worked in Luxembourg and Geneva, and for maybe 5 years, I worked for some banks with their IT systems, between the business and the IT analyst. And yeah, I knew I didn't like it, and I was in deep contemplation of my inner state of being and not really interested in what I was doing necessarily, but I was happy to use some of the skills I had and to apply them in day to day, to work, to make a living, to save some money. And yeah, after some years, I could not do that anymore. I had to, the soul calling was too strong, and I had to move forward and to actually choose again this calling for nature, for community, for a more spiritually focused or energetically focused lifestyle. And I had a calling to go to Peru. So that's what I did. Went to Peru with some people who wanted to also follow in that, found the land. And then I met someone that changed my trajectory, a woman who had a child. And then we started to be together, and it didn't work for them to be in Peru. I basically dropped the project, which was not really moving, and I didn't have yet enough resources to push such a big project. Like building on a land from scratch is super capital intensive. I didn't have the resources or the support to really push it. So we started this relationship and I used my savings to support us. And then that's when she showed me this acupressure mat that she had designed in Europe. And I started to create a digital marketing strategy to sell that. And after a few failures, I really succeeded. And I built a successful business that started to sell these products for people who had back pain, mostly in France and Germany. And I became very sustainable financially. I was free to travel anywhere and explore and save up some capital. And actually, when I was with her, that's when I learned about Bitcoin, only in 2013. And that was at more like towards the end of 2013. So the price was already, it was going from 200 to 400 by the time I could buy it. It was in this parabolic growth from 200 to 1000. And so I experienced my first bull market at that time. And I started to buy a few, some Bitcoins and learn about it. So yeah, this business, I was quite focused on that because it was growing and doing really well. And then the relationship with this woman stopped and I continued to travel still with this vision of settling somewhere and have my own space where I can have stability and where I can have people come and feel the vibration that I am carrying and not that they are carrying too, but beyond some layers and some unconscious protections. So really creating a garden that holds a specific frequency so people can come and they do all kinds of processes and events and workshops and retreats. And the frequency that's being held here is really supporting them in that process. So that was the intention. And in 2015, I decided I wanted this to be Costa Rica. I was going to focus on Costa Rica because of the high sustainability. They have hydropower because of no army, because of no tax on foreign income. So I would not be taxed on the dividends from my business at the personal level. And also because so many foreigners are here in Costa Rica, so many expats who want to explore different ways of living, right? However we call them, some people like to call that hippies. They like to have land, have sovereignty on their land and have space and explore. And this has been happening for a while since the 90s or, you know, a lot of Americans. It was not so much, but it was more in comparison to the population of Costa Rica, more than other South American or Central American countries. And I noticed in 2015 that there were a lot of eco-village and permaculture projects in Costa Rica. So that was adding an argument for me to strongly consider this country to move to and to build my base, my platform at. Right. So I moved here 2015. I had all kinds of experience, still doubting about Costa Rica, still exploring other places. And it's only in 2019 that I really focused on Costa Rica and received the message and the guidance that I had to stay there and to focus my energy there. And then I bought a land. A land showed up here in Uvita and I started the project, right? I started. And then, yeah, it's quite amazing that 1 year and a half later, I realized that someone who is very deeply into Bitcoin and an amazing developer and was here too, right? Which is Lee from Bitcoin Jungle. And I would say the main founder and the developer of the app, the wallet for Costa Rica called Bitcoin Jungle. And we've been trying to create this whole ecosystem here based in Uvita. So I feel like it's a beautiful alignment that I was attracted and called to settle in Uvita. And then there was this beautiful synchronicity of different people who are Bitcoin maximalists and who are focusing on making it happen first in a small scale and then hopefully in a bigger scale. And I, by the way, I was not fully maximalist from the beginning, although I understood the maximalist concept. I still had hoped, and I did play with some other cryptos and speculate, and in 2017 mostly. Yeah, so I became maximalist, you know, from experience, from being so long in the space, from seeing what's going on and understanding and seeing that decentralization cannot, it's not something you can make happen from a central place. It's something you submit to in humility and not something you claim and own. So to realize that and see that in action through the years made me a strong maximalist, let's say. So that's the story. And then more internally, it's been an inner process, because I've been talking about the external, the embodied, the manifested aspect of my story, but I've not so much talked about the inner spiritual side of it, let's say. A little bit, I touched to it, especially in the beginning, but I've been experiencing this whole flow from a very different state and perspective than most people experience life through. Because when I had this awakening at 19, after 2 years, so at the age of 21, again, 21, I had this very profound settling of my focus of attention in a place that's rarely explored and touched for most people, which I like to call I am, or beingness. And it's really the primordial vibration of all life. It starts with being, or we can call it also Om, or it's connected to Om, the primordial vibration. And I was in a meditation retreat, a Vipassana meditation retreat, and I was also reading and receiving a lot of guidance from all kinds of spiritual masters. And the ones I was really resonating with were Hindu, for example, Sri Ramana Maharshi and Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And their teaching was really to focus on the I am. And the I am is not a thought. It's not a concept. There is, of course, the ego, the I am this, I am that, I am not this, I am not that, my story, my hopes, my dreams. But it's something much deeper. It is the feeling, the vibration that is more, even more subtle and essential than love, pure love. It's being, right? There is a frequency, there is a sound to beingness. And I focused and settled my attention there. And I let that become my driver in life, my guide, let's say. My guide at every moment, like anything that I was then doing in the world, I was giving secondary attention to that. I was giving primary attention to the vibration I am and secondary attention to what I was doing, including having a job, you know, relationships and travels and all kinds of things, running a business, taking care of a small child, all kinds of things. So that was at the core of my process, is this focus on the I am. And then there was another very profound shift again that happened in 2015 when I arrived in Costa Rica and I took this name Govinda. I was 33, a very profound shift. But I don't need to go into the details, because I think most people have difficulties to relate with the very specific aspects of the shift. But basically, I was in a state and in a space that is much higher vibration and much less it felt more decentralized because for 12 years I had been looking at the I am and the sense, the beingness in my heart, and then it kind of blew up, and then I was in a different consciousness, a different frequency, and I was functioning from a place where I don't even have a center of attention, but I'm still in this amazing state of freedom, bliss, and spontaneity, playfulness, celebration, and non-identification with what's arising, which is really the key. From my awakening at 19 to now, my whole life has been lived in a state of not taking things personally or seriously, knowing that it's just all appearances. It's not me, it's not affecting the me that is consciousness itself. It's all just appearances. It's all just a dream. It's a beautiful, powerful, profound, multidimensional dream, but it's basically like a dream. So there is no need to mix the sense of self with what's going on, with what you are perceiving, what we are perceiving. So yeah, that's the story. And I'm welcoming any inquiry or reflection, curiosity around details of it, what you want to explore further.
Yes, very interesting. Very interesting story. And I can almost mirror myself in some of those aspects. It's very interesting. And what comes up for me is this with time and space. Specifically, the last part you mentioned about consciousness, and this the name of this podcast is Decentralized Consciousness. So it's right on topic. And when we come into this higher consciousness that you described there, then life becomes similar to a dream, right? And that's because we realize the time and space as concept or constructs. Because what we're talking about here is, right, that we are getting access to higher and higher consciousness. And what you experienced will be just easier and easier for us to experience and actually stay in that and be awakening a reality at the same time, right?
Sure.
This is where we're going to. So it starts with meditation experience, and then we are a little bit more physical, but then it turns into embodied experience.
Yes. So when we say it's like a dream, it doesn't mean that it's very, like for me, dreams in the nighttime, they are much more shallow, and it's still very different. Like there is the dream in my waking state, and there is the dream in my sleeping state. They are still very different. I don't mean that they are the same. I mean that there is an awareness that what's happening is just appearing to me, but that's not where I am. It's not where my essence resides. My essence doesn't reside within this realm. So when you are sleeping, sometimes you realize, oh, actually, I'm in a dream right now. And it's the same thing. It's not where I reside truly. It's just something that's appearing to me. So that's really what I mean. But still, the experience is super different. It's so much more rich in the waking state. There is so much more more frequencies and more richness to it. So, and also when we say dream, it doesn't mean bypassing, because in a lot of spiritual circles and hippie cultures, there is a lot about, okay, it's all a dream, so this is how we can live, and we are consciousness. But people are not necessarily addressing their inner wounds and blocks that are actually making them feel like it's not a dream. It's actually making them feel like everything is not okay, and some things need to be taken seriously, and and they are still attached. They are still afraid. So we are not using concepts and spiritual concepts to bypass fears and to bypass attachments that are there. It actually implies bringing full light and full presence and full consciousness on these fears and blocks that, as you say, it involves embodiment. It's not just floating above the body and into blissful realms, but it's like as consciousness going into a very truthful and humble exploration of all our sensations and emotions, everything that's been repressed, and all the programmings that are stored in our DNA from ancestral lineage, from society's influences. And all of that stuff have to be cleaned. It doesn't matter if you have access to higher consciousness. Your responsibility is to come in your body and clean the mess up, because we are really messy beings, full of complexes and wounds, traumas stored there in many different levels or frequencies of our bodies. So the physical, the emotional, the mental, the energetical, it's all full of blocks and toxins and marks and of wounds from very toxic way of living. Not toxic, let's say different way of living that is based on separation, on struggle, on fighting, on survival, on different strategies, different idea of different way of relating to life. And to reprogram that, you have to completely change the outlook about what life is and what's the way to have a deeper, richer experience as life or with life. And this richer experience comes from a form of surrender, right? It's a deep, deep surrender of the mind, of the heart, of everything that was fighting before, fighting to prove oneself, to survive, to thrive, to win the competitions, to become a good man, a good woman, to prove to others that we achieved, we made it, we could do it, and to feel worthy of reconnecting to the feelings of worthiness and love and appreciation and recognition, and shifting towards, actually, I don't need any of that. The full access to full recognition, love, worthiness is here and now already. And I just have to release all this time space, as you talked about time space, all these time space programmings that make me seek the highest fulfillment in time space rather than finding it in the here now, in the zero point, in the place where outside of space time, which consciousness has access to because it comes from there. So yeah, turning the attention to that and finding the fulfillment and the source of all satisfactions that we can imagine in that, rather than seeking it in space-time. Because if you seek these things in space-time, it's gonna create endless loops, and it's never gonna give it to you. It's gonna give some taste of it, but in the process of having it, you will get attached to it and lose it in other ways somewhere else. And you never really reach a point of stability in space-time where everything is found. It's always going to be a struggle for the next and more integration and more this and more that. And releasing that seeking, releasing that relationship with space-time and the threat of survival. So feeling like I don't need to survive. I'm surviving because life wants me to be here right now. And in surrendering to it, in allowing it through me, it's freeing. It's freeing from these tensions and these resistances that were connected to the drive for survival. There is no need to be afraid of death, basically. That's a main point. As long as you are afraid to look at death, the nothing, the emptiness within that we all have within. We don't need to wait for death to explore death. And as long as we are afraid of going into the nothing and the no identity and the no ideas of anything and the no sensations, then this fear controls us, and this fear keeps us looking away from the depth, because death is at the depth. It's an essential aspect of life. There is birth and death every moment, and it's a fundamental force of existence. So freeing the consciousness from the fear of death and the belief that we have to struggle and to seek within space-time our fulfillment, that's the main shift that's happening. That's a major shift from like a third density or third dimensional consciousness, space and time, to something that includes much higher frequencies that are completely transcendental to space-time, and see space-time just as a medium of experience and not as as something where you reside. We don't reside in space-time, we play with space-time, right? We just navigate timelines through space-time for the sake of exploration, but we are not subject, we are not hostages, and we don't need space-time for our fulfillment. It's there already. It's beyond space-time, and we can fully reclaim it in the here and now and remain fully with it and eternally. It's a massive shift, and it requires a lot of work at different levels to reprogram, to heal all the patterns, the loops in the physical, as I said, the physical, emotional, mental, energetical. And we can use so many things, meditation being amazing. Obviously, meditation is the most direct and pure and clean way to do it. But for many people, meditation is very hard. It's very hard because the mind is very strong, and the blocks in the body are so strong that the energy is not flowing. So it's not pleasant to just sit and be with your sensations, because you've been repressing sensations for lifetimes, and your consciousness is just used to repression and not to fully allowing sensations to blossom and to expand. So most people need very different modalities, especially in the early stages of the awakening process, that involve movement, free form movement, like ecstatic dance is a movement that's been growing globally, that is a form of dancing without substances, without talking. So it's more like focused on the inner experience, and it's beautiful ceremony. And we hold that weekly at Awake every Sunday. And also plant medicine has been helping a lot of people to break through mind loops and mind patterns, whether it's mushrooms or ayahuasca or other substances that are even more powerful and more potent. When you are ready, can be a great help, not something to do all the time because it drains the life force, but occasionally for some breakthroughs. And sound is amazing, right? Different kinds of sounds, prayers, mantra singing, oming, sound circles, singing. It's always going to be healing because you work on your whole body through sound. Actually, all our bodies are a form of sound. Even our physical is made of vibrations. And as you work with sound, you work with your whole being. And I think learning to speak, learning to become a channel for sound, whether it's in an artist way or as you are doing guided meditation, you use your voice. It's people hear sound and they surrender to the guidance, to your voice. It's meditation, but it's also involves sound. I do also purely silent meditation and authentic relating we do here, and awake relating. It's a lot to dive into, to explain in details what these modalities are, but basically it's all about becoming more authentic, innocent, just straight to the point, no bullshit, no masks, no pretending, not trying to be perceived in a certain way, to be validated and accepted, but just to be as we are, take it or leave it. And then also awake relating to actually use relationship as a catalyst for the awakening process, which is a whole topic that I'm sharing. And then there are many other things that we play with and that we explore, and like physical exercise of different kinds, working out, detoxing the body through fasting or through different kinds of change or adaptations to the diet, that to assist and support the shift of different bodies to other frequencies as we heal different loops and blocks that resonate in a specific sound or frequency, and we drop that and it clears, then our whole being shifts, and we have to re-explore what's the right diet that supports us, and that can change. So also, yeah, doing all kinds of detoxification of the organs, because this society is so toxic, full of chemicals, full of poisons in food, in the air, in anything we touch, almost, in the industrial age. So helping, supporting the organs to release toxins, because they block the flow of prana, they block the flow of life force, of blood, of nervous influx in the nerves. It creates inflammation, all these toxins. So there is a lot of work to allow this process to happen at all the levels, to allow the energy to flow, to open our highest centers, so that consciousness has access to our bodies to actually explore itself in higher frequencies, but then also bringing all our centers of consciousness in connection to each other and not denying the lower centers for exploration of the superior centers. For example, in a lot of spiritual traditions, there is some repression of sexuality, because the thing is, sexuality can be a huge drain of energy, right? When it's, especially for men, when you have regular orgasmic discharge of the life force, including semen, there is a lot of energy that is dissipated in this way. And spiritual traditions, in almost all cases, this suggests celibacy. But for many people are not ready to just go straight into celibacy. They need to still engage in some ways with life to reconcile this energy with other aspects of themselves, and to learn the other polarities through the play with the other polarities in a way that doesn't dissipate the energy, that fully harness the energy, and that then expands and explore the higher centers. So instead of having to repress the lower centers, you actually include them. And that's something I really value here in my work at Awake, is not saying, oh, this center is superior than this center, sex is lower than meditation because this and that. It's more like, how can I have all my dimensions of my being in a frequency where they are together, they communicate with each other, they reinforce each other, they become one field of frequencies instead of different fields that are resonating at very different frequencies. They become one song, one music. And to make that happen is a deep work, right? It's not just opening some chakras and connecting. It's actually constantly refining the flow between the centers and seeing how is my energy behaving, how am I dissipating my force, my energy, and in service of what center am I dissipating my energy? Am I dissipating my energy in service of my sex center, in my power center, my heart center, my expression center, my third eye center? Where is my energy being spent? And then making it harmonious, making it intentional. And I think there are beautiful metaphors between this awakening process and ownership of the circulation of our energy and the the Bitcoin phenomenon, the innovation that is Bitcoin, and how it also connects to energy and ownership of energy and the importance of energy, and then the understanding and the feeling, the direct connection that money is coming from or connected strongly, intimately connected to energy, because money is the blood of society. And I would say prana is the blood of our soul in some way, of our embodiment, even before the blood, physical blood. So to realize that money is the blood, and therefore it's energy, and to make it connected to that, and to ground it in reality, to have it grounded, not to have it abstract as an idea. Oh yeah, it's just proof of stake. It's enough. This is how it's going to be decentralized, just as an idea. No, it has to be like you prove it's grounded in reality, the reality of energy. And you cannot fake that. You cannot pretend that. It's something you have to work with, and it connects you to the earth. It connects you to the reality of this life, and it avoids bypassing embodiment. So I love that Bitcoin is this thing that involves so many different aspects, from the mining. And when I say mining, I mean gathering physical materials to build a mining machine, and then the creating a space for the mining machines, plugging them to a power source, finding the right power source, and then that's just to find the blocks, and then there is all the code, and then there is, on top of all the code, all the users and all the applications and the wallets and the human ecosystem and the human beliefs about Bitcoin, and then on top of that, this amazing principle of having a universal global ledger that transcends any and all institutions that human ever had on planet Earth. So I just thought about that when talking about energy and connecting the centers, the chakras, or however we want to call them, within ourselves. It's like we don't have to deny one center to expand in another. We are creating a symphony of all our centers singing together. And for me, Bitcoin is such a beautiful symphony of all the, of so many different aspects, and including its creation that was so pure, right? By the creator stepping out and not taking any personal benefit from it. We don't know if it's intentional or accidental, but it doesn't matter, because it is what it is and it's pure. So all these aspects, the way it was created, and then, yeah, there is the purity of the heart in that, the nobility. So that adds to it. There is, for me, all the centers are represented in some ways in the Bitcoin ecosystem, and it's why I believe in it, why I resonate with it, why I want to build the new civilization on it. And I think we have to start. We should not wait for the old civilization to collapse completely before we start building the new. And really, this place that I have here is just a node within the greater context of planet Earth waking up and starting to build the new civilization that's going to be built on principles that are true, that's really connected to reality and the source of life itself, which cannot be cheated with. You cannot cheat with the source of life. You cannot. And to build, and it's authenticity, basically, right? For me, the existing system has been built on layers upon layers of pretense and fakeness and manipulation and exploitation. And there, it's everything except being authentic and compassionate and vulnerable and surrendering. None of that. So the new civilization, it's something so different, right? I'm just already in it. I'm fully in the new civilization, but I find a lot of playfulness and in observing the old, kind of dissolving, and curiosity in how it's going to play out. It's very, very, very interesting for me to observe such an outcome, such an impossible situation resolving itself. I think the next few years or decades will be very, very entertaining.
Yes, it's these, if we see reality, as you say, that we allow the physical reality to flow, then we have our own personal manifestation. And then we have the community, and we have the global humanity. And so, you know, in the outside time and space, these are created, you know, by the nodes, by the souls. And I think sometimes it's happening that some people mix up this with their own creation and then the global creation. So it's like many Bitcoiners see the global creation, manifestation, and then they feel, oh, I should do something about that.
Yes, true.
So they are working in the global manifestation rather than working on their own personal.
Yeah, generate the new from your own center, from within. It's instead of taking in from outside and then thinking, oh, I have to change that and adapt it to Bitcoin. Yeah, I think Bitcoiners have to. I mean, it's not that they have to, but it would definitely help some people who might be ready for it to understand Bitcoin as some kind of metaphor rather than an absolute truth. Because Bitcoin ultimately is still outside. It's still in some ways, at least. It's still in the external realm, and it's not yet. It's not part of our biological and hardware. It's not part of our hardware. It's still an external hardware that's running it. And I think it would be nice if people realize that it's a form of metaphor for our true hardware, the ones that truly empowers us, frees us, liberates us, that makes us sovereign. And so it's not actually, Bitcoin makes us free, sovereign, and empowered externally by saving our money, by having a fair system, disempowering the psychopaths that try to control people and exploit them. But Bitcoin reflects something that is within them, and that they have to actually do the work. The proof of work will be the proof of going in and finding the true source of energy within, and you know, and then running being transparent and truthful, and not distorting reality to accommodate some of your shadows and some of your fears, and lying to yourself and lying to others, being untruthful. And they understand that it's a tool for us to become an embodiment of these principles, like full transparency, truthfulness, and being grounded in a very abundant supply of energy, and then from there we become nodes for something totally new, as you say, instead of having to react and to try to change the all that's dissolving, that cannot be changed. Like, the existing system is not gonna be like fixed and with some paste and tape. That's not gonna happen. It's going to have to fully collapse and die, and there will be a very deep process, like a very deep shock to the collective system to digest that collapse. And And then we have to say, okay, let's build something new. And what are the values of the new? So if Bitcoiners could already do that, they would start to become a much more powerful force. Right now, they still rely too much on Bitcoin itself to prove itself, rather than becoming themselves an embodiment and a manifestation of the principles that Bitcoin also represent. So if they could just be part of the new, and I think in some ways they are, so I'm not saying they are not at all. I'm saying to some extent their consciousness is still very much external focused, and it's to reply to the point you brought about their external focus. But I think if people would own that they still have some work to do, some proof of work to accomplish, to fully generate the new, instead of waiting for the old to come to collapse or trying for Bitcoin to crush everything else, but to be themselves, this change, right? Be the change you want to see. That would be awesome. It would greatly accelerate Bitcoin, because Bitcoin would start to be charged with the aura of all these people, which is already the case. Bitcoiners are amazing people. They have great values. They are in many ways an example, but there are also a lot of Bitcoiners who are not yet that, right? Who are still in it for the money, in it for the fiat gains, in it because they just follow some things, but they are not yet being the example, and not just an example, but generating this new reality that is totally free from the clone world and the fiat world. So yeah, that's a great point, and hopefully we can, and I'm sure you are inspiring Bitcoiners to look within and to own their role as a node. And I think the concepts that you are using are very useful and inspiring for people who are more tech-minded, and to help them realize that meditation is not just for some mystics in a monastery or for some yogis in India or whatever. It's actually also for tech people and for finance people and for anyone to look within and to plug in to the true source of energy and life force, and to become channels for that energy, and to operate from a different place completely, where we are surrendered and merged with a field greater than us, a fully decentralized field. Right now, that's what's happening at Bitcoin. We are gradually, the financial system is going to merge with the Bitcoin field, and it has no choice. It's that or there is no more exchanges, and the financial system will collapse. And it's the same with the ego consciousness. Either it will have to merge with the unitary field by surrendering to it, humility and letting go of ego and resistances and tensions, or it's going to become crazy and be flushed out. It's going to be flushed out because the frequencies here will not make it bearable to have a life in tensions and separation in ego consciousness. I don't think that in the future civilization, there will be much ego consciousness. It will be much more based on unity consciousness and us existing as a collective, and much more humility and service to others. We are getting fulfilled by fulfilling the purpose of our soul. We are not getting fulfilled by luring people in our products and services, or even exploiting them or stealing from them or dominating them. That's gone. We are just being fulfilled by sharing our highest, and that's when the highest value is being actually generated. It's when we become pure channels for life force, free from fear of lacking, of unworthiness, of dying, of being controlled, of this or that. But we are just purely channels, and it's just our soul programs just manifest all our gifts, and everyone around benefits from that. And it's mind-blowing the abundance that we then create, because everyone is encouraged to reach their highest potential, from the scientist to the musician to the anything, the builder, the architect, the anything, everyone, the caregiver, the everyone is just so fulfilled and become so good at what they are doing, because they are fully becoming one with their soul and with life and with the heart of things, and they truly enjoy it. And that's true abundance, right? It's not money. Money is just a representation for the abundance that we can create based on our state of being. So it's true, Bitcoiners understand better money, but do they understand how to be a better channel of value, and value not just for the mind and for the body, value for the soul, your own soul and the soul of all other people around you? That's an exploration everyone is on, and it's a beautiful one. And I think Bitcoiners are already quite on this exploration, and Bitcoin has helped many of them to ask themselves some very important questions and brought them the humility to answer to that in a truthful way, which makes them Bitcoiner. I believe that to be a true Bitcoin pleb person, you need to be humble, to be humbled and to realize, okay, yeah, there is some principles that go beyond my understanding, or my old ideas are maybe not what serves me, or what the mainstream believes is maybe not. I don't know everything, but there is a force greater than me that I benefit from surrendering to a force greater than what I can, even if I cannot comprehend how great it is. And this, if you do that with Bitcoin, then you can do that too with great spirit, and with the source of life, and or God, or the self, however you call it. So it's really bringing people in the right direction, in my opinion.
Yeah. One more thing I would like to discuss before we finish here is the seasons of consciousness. I think many of us struggle with this sometimes. And what I mean with the seasons, and I would like to hear your experience with it, it's because we need to go through the fall, the autumn, and then the winter. Like all habits, all actions that we did in one level of consciousness, we need to let them die, right? And it's easy to, yeah, I want to go to the next level of consciousness. Like, where are the actions? You want to go from action to actions, like vision to vision to vision. But from my experience, it's this fall and winter when it's like you feel that the world is just going to collapse. Your world is going to collapse, yeah, because sure, it's all your patterns that die.
Yes.
Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yes, there is definitely a cycles to in this process, where you go through peaks and valleys, very deep valleys. Actually, we call it, the mystics call it, you know, the dark night of the soul, and it's usually not just one dark night of the soul. It just keeps coming at deeper levels and in different ways. And in this process, it's not just bright and happy, and you have bright moments and beautiful, well, like uplifting times, and then there is more stable times, and then you have to go into very dark times where your mind will have more dark thoughts about yourself, about everything, heavier feelings, and you doubt everything. It can be very painful. It can be like, it can be close to depression. It can be actually, you can be diagnosed with depression, even though you are in an intense spiritual awakening process. You could be diagnosed with depression because for some time you need to be in bed. You don't want to do anything. You don't care about your family, friends, or anything. You're just in such a empty, unknown, and no care, and no heart, no nothing. And it can be extremely destabilizing for the mind, especially, and for relatives who witness that. But it, in my experience, it's a necessary process to have these times where we let go, and our minds goes into completely changing its perspectives, and we doubt, and it's all okay. It's about, again, not taking it seriously, knowing that these too shall pass. It's just a phase. And this process is a bit like a spiral. And in each round of the spiral, you go through the same pattern, but each time differently, and each time in different frequencies, different vibrations, more integrated, more trusting in the process. After each round, you start to understand, oh yeah, that's what's going on. Yeah, now I know. And then you don't make a story out of it. You don't panic it, and you don't think that you are regressing when you get depressed. You just, your depressed states and depressed emotions have to come into consciousness. They have to be blessed. They have to be embraced. They have to be integrated with your awareness of the present moment. Everything has to come into the present moment consciousness. It's not like we have to repress bad feelings and go for good feelings. Actually, what we have to do is reconciling all feelings in one field, and first finding in ourselves the centers that help us to reconcile all these feelings in one field, and then seeing that actually depression is beautiful, sadness is beautiful, fear, anger, beautiful things to explore, to dive into, to feel deeply in our belly, in our chest, in everywhere in our body, in our throat, and feel the constriction, feeling the pain, and that's how it's going to then move and open the door for the next round, basically. And every time it's higher frequencies, more bliss, and more trust in the process, higher flows of energy. So definitely in the first rounds, it's important to remind people that that's part of the process, that nothing to react to, not trying to attach to the bright and beautiful and the I'm getting what I want. And no, embracing also the other side of it where everything is collapsing and you don't know anything and you're depressed and you're not interested in anything anymore. That's okay. Just give yourself the space. Give the space for something new to be born. Look at nature, right? Nature is born from darkness, from the earth, from nothing, from everything came from just water and or just in the earth, or it, there are these cycles where it's not coming from anywhere. It's coming from just an element, space. And when you put just all the elements together, life flourishes again and again and again and again. And it happens within us. So the deeper we clear, we embrace this clearing and this depression or this darkness within, the deeper the roots for the next flowerings, actually. And if we resist to this depression and we already want to be in the next, as you say, the next active thing, the next achievement, the next bright space, then we didn't build the deep roots within us to actually sustain this better creation that we want to bring. But because we are so focused on the external and the creation and the achieving and the activity, we don't see that the tree needs deep roots in the darkness. And that's where it's actually sustaining its strength from, and all the nutrients for all the flowers and the fruits. Without deep roots, there will be very little fruits. Without deep roots, there will be very few fruits. And even if you glorify the little fruits, even if they seem amazing to some other people, they are still far from the potential of what they could be if you actually fully allowed going into your darkness, your shadows, your pain, your depression, and give real true space for that. Even if you have to admit to others, yeah, I'm not doing anything. Yeah, it's been 2 months. I'm just staying home, laying down in bed, playing chess, reading books, and I have no care for anything. And it feels good to give myself this space. Nobody wants to say that to others because there is this judgment of that being such a failure, such a loser would do that, right? But actually, at the spiritual level, it could be that you are the wise guy. You are the one really, really doing the work. You are actually the one doing the valuable work for yourself and for others, because the future fruits that you will bring to the world will come from much deeper places within yourself. And yeah, of course, I'm talking about the person who does it really, where he's really exploring. I'm not saying just lay in bed, do nothing, and wait for the fruits. You have to do the work. You have to feel. You have to go deep within, to accept, to change the way you look inside, and to change the way you look at pain and discomfort and sadness and depression and anger, and just realize that this is energy that you can tap into. You can push your roots into that and suck it and have pleasure from it, instead of being afraid of it and pushing it away and living at the surface.
Yeah, very well explained. Yeah, good. You know, how I experienced this conversation, it's been very interesting. It's been multidimensional, I would say, because I've been hearing some questions in my mind, and then a few seconds afterwards, you're already answering them. And so it feels like we've been tapped into similar information channels. And it's been great experiencing the frequency that you are sending out, and to hear the stories.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to be held by your space and your presence and your receptivity. And I would say, when you say the frequencies that I'm emitting, I would say that are flowing through, even, you know, it's even a more of a humble approach of, okay, these bodies, this person, this character, this personality, this Govinda is kind of just like a channel for life to flow through, to express through. As the life force flows, it just translates into words and sounds. But who is it really? It's life, right? It's just channeled through, in a way, channeled through us. It's like we are an antenna, and we modulate frequencies, and then the frequencies pass through us and get modulated and get shared and participate to the greater field, the unitary field, where indeed we are very connected together. And yeah, it's beautiful to hear that our minds were having similar, our attention, the attention was going in similar questions and addressing them.
Yeah, I was quite surprised, because it happened several times. Because when I listen to you, I don't hold on to any questions, you know, because if I hold on to them, then I can't hear what you're saying after that. So I just allow everything to flow, right? And then, so then I just hear a question, and then it goes on, and then you're answering that, aha, and then you hear another question. And so it was very nice experience.
I noticed you've been very receptive and letting me a lot of space. In some interviewer, they are more into kind of cutting with the question that comes up for them based on what I'm saying, but you've been always just letting me finish, and I've spoke quite long periods of time every time, and it's a bit unusual. So you have, I think you have a deeper form of like receptivity and patience to not jump into the question, but letting it unfold, and then, yeah, maybe I'll come back to that, but let's see what happens. And that's quite unusual for a podcast interviewer. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting to hear, so I didn't want to interrupt anything.
Awesome.
All right. Great. I hope to be able to visit your retreat center in Costa Rica in the future. It sounds amazing.
Yes, and Uvita is great for Bitcoiners. So many places you can spend Bitsats at and meet Bitcoiners, and you know it's fun. And yeah, with pleasure. With pleasure. You could share some meditations and guide some meditations here, and it's a beautiful community around here.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Okay, I will include some links to your Twitter, Noster, and to your website,
I'm
Wake.
actually my Noster, I have to check that I still have access to the private key first.
I
Because
think
I
I
did
found
it.
you there.
No, I have a public key, but I don't know if I have the private key. So it means if I don't have the private key, I would have to change it to another account later. But anyway, Twitter, I barely use it. It's more of a Bitcoin bit. It's to be feel connected to the Bitcoin maximalist there. And I don't really have a channel yet where I share my stuff. I just have the Awake website, and I'm gonna start sharing. But we didn't talk about that in the podcast so far, but I didn't mention that although I was going through all these amazing activations and shifts of consciousness, I was never really focused on sharing with others because it was still happening within me with such intensity, and it felt like I have to hold space for myself and go deeper, further. And I think it's only maybe gonna come now because of Awake and because I have a space to really hold others that I'm gonna start to be more expressive. And also, I'm naturally becoming more expressive. Like my abilities to channel words gradually improve, and then it's gonna happen just spontaneously as people ask me to talk here and there, and then suddenly I will put together some stuff or a YouTube channel, whatever it is. But right now it's like there is nothing. I've not been focused on sharing. In the past I did write some stuff, but I never focused into trying to make anything out of it. And I like the aliveness of the moment, and I've never tried to push myself or my or teachings or anything because I was focused on other things. I was so yeah, that's why there is no website, there is no Twitter where I talk about spirituality or anything like that. There is no platform right now where I'm sharing of myself. Awake website is a website for the space, which is a space in service of all kinds of things, not just of me sharing. And I'm responsible of the space and holding the frequency of the space, but it's not yet a platform for me to share. So if people want to hear more or connect with me, sure, they can follow on Twitter and I will maybe start to share there or redirect people when there are places where I share. But I don't have no idea what form or shape my channels of expression will take. So I just wanted to clarify that for your information and
It's
your audience if they're interested.
it is interesting to be projecting our ideas onto something, you know, like Twitter is one environment, and then every platform is, you know, so like you talked about, like money, you know, it's a frequency, it's an energy, and every platform is an energy, and to express yourself in one environment is very different from another.
Yes, I see that completely. Yeah, for sure. Each platform.